E1, number 24A.
Now, we have finished the level of Christian Science and have been investigating really that level of Christian Science through a structured sense of the word in Christian Science, of Christ, Christianity, and science in Christian Science. And so in a way we have come to a complete survey of what we call our chart, or which is a model of being. Now, when we started out, we were asking ourselves, what are the laws? And I speak now about laws in general. We have seen that Mrs. Eddy would show that her discovery shows forth the laws of God, and that those laws are laws of God, that God is the lawmaker, the lawgiver, the law of the whole of creation, and the law of being. And we were also discussing quickly that she says that science is the law of God, or that Christian Science is the law of God, showing therefore that science must contain all those laws. And she speaks of law in the plural, meaning that there are more than one law. Though God is a law to himself, in the singular, is a law to himself, he shows that science is that law of God to himself, and that science brings forth all the many laws. From the infinite one in Christian Science comes one infinite principle and its infinite ideas, and with it comes rules and laws and their demonstrations. And we were asking ourselves, what does Mrs. Eddy say what these laws are? And had only very faint indications about what the laws of Christian Science are. And so we said, here is a kind of anomaly, namely that we have a statement without an answer, and that we can't just sweep this question under the carpet and say, well, there are laws and God is the law, and in being there are laws, and that's that. Because we can't do that in physics or in chemistry or in arithmetic or in mathematics or geometry. We jolly well have to know what these laws are. And so we were investigating the new paradigm, which we have asked, what are the laws? Especially, what are the structural laws? Namely, those laws which we can define within the structure of the whole chart. And so we recapitulate quickly what these laws are, and especially how we can call these laws, how we could, so to say, label these laws. Say you have gravitation, and therefore if you put gravitation into a formula, you call it the law of gravitation. You give it a label. Now, if we do that, naturally we are using our best spiritual sense and scientific sense together, and are now trying to approximate the naming and defining of these laws. We started out with the level of science itself. And there we had that law that being is its own infinite being. In other words, we had a very simple law of isness. So perhaps we could call that law the law of isness, or the isness law of the infinite. The infinite is the infinite. And then naturally we are seeing what the elements of that law is, then we could see that we could elaborate on that law by substituting being with the seven synonymous terms, etc., etc. So we had that law on the level of science itself as the isness law. Then we went to the level of divine science. On the level of divine science, we were considering how being operates as being, or how being operates to itself as the one being. And so we felt that that was perhaps the law of self-organization, that cybernetic law of the closed loop, which is the law of self-organization, that cybernetic law that takes care of itself. Therefore, coming out from God, through God, as God, to God, is that big spiral or closed loop of the law of self-organization. This was the second law. Then we came to absolute Christian science. And in absolute Christian science, we split up the law of absolute Christian science first into four sub-laws, namely into the law of the Word in absolute Christian science. And there we had that sense of the law of creative impulsion, perhaps we could call it, the law of that creative impulsion, or perhaps we also could call it in a cybernetic way, the law of the success mechanism, perhaps the law of divine success mechanism. That's how cybernetic would call it. It's that law which states that within the impulsion of life is built in the success of that impulsion. Then we took the Christ in absolute Christian science, and we saw that the Christ in absolute Christian science had as its task to translate really the divine principle to the point of specific idea. And so we felt it was that law of individualization. Perhaps we could also call it the law of specification, you know, that scanner law of selecting and adaptation. Whatever we may call it, but we somehow hear what it is all about. You know, it's an interesting thing that part of the Christ in absolute Christian science remembers us very much, really, to Darwin's law of evolution. That Darwin's law of evolution all is built on selection and adaptation. And as I said, I think during the week, I don't know if it was taped or if it was during a break, that Professor Eigen recently showed that this law of Darwin really begins to prove itself in a quite a different way, namely that he found out that actually the fundamental acids, the DNA, has an affinity of selecting and adapting, and that on that basis really the evolution, not by accident but by probability, could be proved. which was not the case until about 2 years ago. So it seems as if the Christ here in Absolute Christian Science is the answer to that whole question of selection and mutation and adaptability, because here in Truth, Life and Love we have that law that the one truth that out of that whole genetic reservoir can come forth through further selection, life, and through adaptation, love, a higher form of life. So here the Christ would show us really the basic, the spiritually divine basic law, of which Darwin's law is actually just the material counterfeit or the material spin-off. Then we had in Christianity, in Absolute Christian Science, that law of the mother, the father and the mother eternalizing the idea. So we could perhaps call it the law of eternalization. Even perhaps that law of reproduction, of constant or infinite reproduction, reappearing. I guess the law of eternalization is perhaps better. Then we came to science, in Absolute Christian Science, you know, with Truth and Love, where we began to see that every idea existed since time immemorial, that it existed already as a perfect solution, even before Abraham was, before the world was. And so we called it the law of the pre-stabilized solution, or the law of the pre-stabilized perfection, something like that. Just indicating that there exists in being a law which says whatever comes out as a new discovery and a new invention is actually nothing new, but has existed in the pre-stabilized realm of the real already in its perfect form. So here again we have four other laws. And then we went to the level of Christian Science, and we are considering there the Word. And what we felt there was that the Word was that which brought the declaration or the statement of being right to the human mind, so that the human mind could see the light. It is therefore the law of enlightenment, or what we also call it, the law of creativity. That most important law of creativity, like the days of creation were presented in the word order. It's the law of perfect enlightenment through sevenfold steps until on the seventh day you had the day of perfection and rest. Quite different it is when we consider the Christ in Christian Science. There we had really the law of translation, or looked at from the human standpoint, the law of reformation, or the law of retranslation. Therefore, Christ gives us the law of translation and retranslation by showing how the Christ can come to every situation which is wrong and translate it right back into a perfect idea in mind, thereby correcting the situation. So it's the law of translation and retranslation, the law of reformation, however we want to call it, but that's the tone of it. When it comes to Christianity, we saw that the purpose of that Christianity order was really to establish universal reflection, transparent reflection, complete reflection. The middle synonymous term is spirit, and so we could call it, from the divine standpoint, really the law of reflection. From the human standpoint, it is really the law of demonstration, or the law of the self-resolution of error. It depends on which subcategory in that column we look at. In that column, you see, in that column of the divine, we would have the law of perfect reflection. In that second column of the perfect humanity, we would have the law of demonstration. And in that column of mortal manhood, we would have had the law of the self-dissolution of error. Because right at the end of it, we had the nihilistic sense, the sense of a great void. Then we came to science, in Christian Science, this afternoon. And what we were seeing is that there is a very definite law of structuring understanding. So it's the law of structuring understanding, because it says very clearly where to start in that law, namely with solid life, with your numerals of infinity, and then with the calculus, then with the matrix, and see that it is a self-operative law. So we have that law of structuring understanding. Yes. Can you see that through pure deduction in the spiritual, through the ability to think in categories, that's all what we have been doing. We have always been thinking in categories, either in horizontal categories or in vertical categories or as point of intersection of these categories, so that through these ways of thinking, we were able to deduce from the one principle, really, already many laws. How many are they already? 10 laws already. But that's only the beginning, naturally. Say, we have left out something, namely, first, we had said it is the law of science, of the level of science, the isness law. Then we went to the horizontal of divine science as the law of self-organization. But when we came to absolute Christian Science, we went into the verticals. If we take the law of absolute Christian Science as the whole law, really, which would comprise within itself the law of the Word and Christ and Christianity and Science, we would find there what I would say, the law of spontaneity. Because each one of those four have a terrific sense of spontaneity. Because in the Word we had the law of creative impulsion, and you get the sense of impulsion, spontaneity, something happens. In the Christ we had the sense of spontaneity by seeing that the Christ can pick out spontaneously out of the whole data bank that specific idea which we need to know, just as in a computer. Just goes over it and scans it and picks it right out, doesn't have to wait a long time. And in Christianity, we had again a sense of spontaneity because we could see it's the law of eternalization. Well, eternalization means nowness, like spontaneity. And then especially in the last one, in science, in truth and love, which we call the law of the pre-stabilized perfection, where you see that the solution is already here. You can't have it more spontaneous than right here. So, in a way, I think the common denominator that runs right through the law of absolute Christian Science is that law of spontaneity. See, it is that which we said in that level we have the relationship of principle to idea, principle bringing forth infinite ideas, and that is not the time sense, therefore spontaneous. When we come to the level of Christian Science and had those four sub-laws, we can see that they had a common denominator in themselves. Namely, I would say that they have as a common denominator the law of causality. Namely, we had there always some kind of time sense in it, a development sense in it. In the world, we have the development from mind to love, from the first day of creation to the seventh day of creation. In a law of creativity, you take step by step, step by step. It's like links in a chain. And so one has a sense of causality where one step would lead to the next step. And the same thing we had in the Christ translation and retranslation, we could see the law of causality in another way, namely that the idea, the Christ idea, was causing, so to say, the appearing of the right idea and was causing all the trouble if that idea is resisted. In Christianity, where we had the law of reflection, there again we had a kind of causality in it, because we were building up the greatness and the bigness of an idea step by step through principle, mind, soul to the point of spirit, and then from there broadening it out into the realm, and therefore gave a realm sense of life, truth and love. And so it was in Christian Science, where we had the law of structuring our consciousness. There again we had a sense of causality, namely saying you have to start first with your numerals, and that brings about the calculus, and from the calculus shows that you have infinite possibilities and applications within the one plane, and every time you can take that those laws and rules anew and play the game again in all its perfection. So I guess that is somehow the law of causality, that law about which the textbook speaks quite a lot, that mind is the cause of all things, and usually she gives the causality between mortal mind bringing forth matter, the subjective state of mortal mind, bringing forth disharmony, mortal mind being the cause of all sickness, and therefore has a great sense of causality in the negative, and then correcting it through the causality of the one mind. So in this way we have already 12 laws, you see, and that's only the beginning, because the more fundamental we know these laws, the more we can see how they operate in another relationship. But before we do that and see more about it, and I think in order to see that more, we need to know a bit more about the matrix and so on, so that perhaps next year we will talk a lot about laws which have quite, again, a different formulation and connotation. But today we still can see other laws through our knowledge of what we have been doing, namely the synonym laws. We have up to now been considering the level laws and the vertical laws, but we also see that within the chart we have the seven synonymous terms, and investigating the seven synonymous terms, we will find that Mrs. Eddy really here gives the clearest indication of laws. Because if one goes through the concordance and looks up everything what it says about the law of mind, the law of spirit, the law of soul, the law of life, the law of truth, the law of love, we will see that these laws are very different, namely that they are naturally coined by the synonymous term, can you say coined? They have the impress of the tone of the seven synonymous terms. So let's take the law of mind. When she speaks about law and laws in connection with mind, there we see something very definite, namely, especially in the prose works, this comes out very definitely, that law is an idea of mind. Or let's say that mind is law per se. That's why in our study of the synonymous terms, we always attribute law as an idea to mind and not to the other synonymous terms. Because she brings out that mind is law per se, law as such. Law as such. She speaks then about mind that it is the law of causation, that the law of mind is really science, Christian science, metaphysics, that's in the prose works. So here we see law in connection with mind is law per se, it's a law of causation. But when it comes to spirit and shows law in relationship to spirit, then she doesn't say that law is spirit per se, or that spirit is law as such. But then she speaks about the law of nature. That spirit is the law of nature, of the spiritual nature, naturally. The law of birth, and indicates really that order, which is birth, is heaven's first law.